You're listening to Around Comics, episode 274, the last episode. Hey there, folks. Chris here. And before we jump into this last episode that we recorded at Dark Tower Comics, I have a couple notes and announcements to pass along, some things that have come up in the last couple weeks since we recorded. First of all, you should know by now that we're going to be at C2E2. We've been talking about it the last few episodes, and I'm sure you'll hear a little bit more about it in the upcoming segments. We're going to be at booth 1440, which if you go to C2E2.com, you can check their exhibitor floor plan, and you'll see that we're at the upper right-hand corner, just across the aisle from Artist Alley. So if you're going to be at the convention this weekend, drop by, say hello. We'll be doing some extra inning recordings for some upcoming stuff. So you haven't heard the absolute last from the Around Comics crew. We're hoping to have a good time with some of our other fellow podcasters and creators at the show this weekend. So certainly come on by. If you want to hang out with us after the show, certainly encourage that. Friday night, we have some plans to be determined. The best way to find out what we're doing throughout the weekend is just follow us on Twitter. I'm at Sean Eastman, and you can follow the show in general at Around Comics. Friday night, we'll come up with some plans here as the week progresses. Saturday night, we're going to be at Reggie's, and that starts right after the end of the convention that day. There's going to be a lot of other podcasters there, creators. It's being put on by Pop Cult, and should be a good time. Music, food, drinks, and a lot of fun on Saturday night. As you probably already know, our favorite charitable organization is the Hero Initiative. They're going to be set up at C2E2 as well, and they have a really fun promotion that they're doing. If you want to get some ink, want to get a tattoo, they have a great way to do that. They're going to be basically selling off or auctioning off your chance to get a Ron Garney original image tattooed on you. So go to theheroinitiative.org, find out about that. And like we always say, whenever you go to a convention, make the Hero Initiative your first stop. It's a great place to get sketches and awesome exclusive merchandise. And it's for a fantastic cause. So remember to check out the Hero Initiative, not just at C2E2, but in general. Now, for this last episode, it was the end of a very long night, so it gets a little nutty in places. But as a special treat for listeners out there, and you know, quite honestly for us, we went through and picked out some of our favorite interview clips from the last 4 years. So throughout the course of this episode, we're putting in some conversations with some of our favorite creators and just altogether favorite people in the comics industry. So it'll be a nice little walk down memory lane as we go through this one. And lots of thank yous get thrown out at the end of the show. But on behalf of Tom, Sal, myself, and everyone who's a part of the larger Around Comics family, thank you for your support and listening to this silly little show for the last 4+ years. It's been a fantastic ride, and I can't express enough how much your support has meant to us. So without further ado, here is the last recording of Around Comics at Dark Tower Comics. Anyway, you'll hear a little bit more from us from C2E2. Thanks, folks. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast. where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago.
Doing this shit?
If you're in Chicago, please drop by. That is the last time I'm going to say that.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, right. Favorite last word, sure.
I don't believe that for a minute.
All right, so here we are.
Here
this
we go.
This is the last episode.
Can somebody give me a drink?
Dun, dun, dun. Here's a half-empty bottle of Jim Beam.
No, that's good. That's good. Sam, yeah, Sam.
All right.
Let me get it. Some of that sound.
Hey there, everyone. Christopher Niesman here, and this is it. The last of a very long evening here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles as we celebrate the end of Around Comics. And I'm joined by my partner in crime.
My only friend, Niesman.
The co-originator of Around Comics, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Co-founder.
I am.
We also have a longtime listener, friend of the show, artist extraordinaire, Mr. Kyle Bice.
Howdy.
Okay, he's all cool.
Howdy.
And Mr. Stevie D, how you doing?
I'm drunk!
It has been one of those nights. We've had a fantastic time. We've talked to a bunch of folks that have been involved with the show, been guests of the show, and yeah, I guess this last hour could be absolute disaster, but
more than likely,
wouldn't
be the first time.
Drunken disaster.
But
I'm starting to sober up.
Are you? You drank yourself through.
There you go.
don't move that bottle of Jim Beam too far away from me.
I'm on the other side.
All right. Let me see. You know, we had some voicemails that we've tried to record here over the last couple weeks, and we've had some issues.
No.
So
it's very important.
I want to play some of these. We had talked with Tom about him. This is
Tom Caters.
Tom Caters. Ooh. Tom Caters.
Quitter.
Who's Tom Caters? I don't
know. From like 2 months.
Used to be on the show years ago.
From like 2 months ago. This is Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Caters. This is Frank from Boston.
Jesus.
Boston.
The place you want to go to is called the Outer Limits. It's in Waltham on Moody Street. It's a hike from where you are going to be.
Moody Street.
But it's well worth the trip.
Fucking better go, Quaters.
Wednesdays, he's open well past 6:30. Tell him Frank sent you, and you'll be fine.
Okay, so first what you do is you park the car in the yard.
Is Outer Limits a strip club or a comic book shop? I'm not sure.
I love the East Coast. I love the accent. So hopefully, Tom, you go check out the Outer Limits. And Frank, thank you very much for calling.
Go.
Tell him Frank sent you.
Oh.
You get 20% discount.
This one's from our buddy Ian Levenstein.
Ian.
I love Ian.
Ian's a good guy.
Hey, guys.
No, I do.
Ian Levenstein from Comic Timing Podcast. Just wanted to, congratulate you on being around as long as you have.
Well, they couldn't stop us.
Thanks for leaving now.
You guys are going away. I mean, one of my favorite things to do over the past couple of years has been to sort of catch up on episodes that I've missed.
Because, I love Ian because he's Jewish.
I mean, I'll admit, it's been
really
like back and forth with the listeners.
I never would have guessed.
I won't listen for a few months, and I'll catch up on as many episodes as possible. Then I won't listen for a few months, and I'll catch up as many as possible. Well, I guess I'll have plenty of time to do that now on other episodes that you guys have in the back end. But Around Comics has been one of the best. It's been one of the top podcasts out there since it's been around, and you guys should be proud of that. Chris, Tom, Sal and
Kyle.
Everybody else has been involved over the years. To be very, very happy with the product that you put out there. I mean, hell. I mean, I announced Comic Timing on Around Comics for the first time, and I mean that puts you guys in a special place in my heart for that. That I was able to do that on your show. But yeah. I mean, there'll be other projects to listen to you guys on for sure, and. I'll certainly enjoy hanging out with everybody sort of say goodbye to the show. So here's to Around Comics, and I'll see you guys on the flip side. Bye.
All right. Thank you very much, Ian. we've got a couple more emails. Or voicemails. I'm gonna save those till a little bit later in the show.
Later.
Yeah, well, whenever we're, you know, starving for content.
Jesus.
I.e. 2 minutes from now.
Yeah.
It's been a 3 week end of the show.
Oh, and that's just tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just tonight. So it's been fun tonight. We had someone call from St. Louis.
Who the hell was that?
Called John.
Was that John? I don't even know. I'm sorry.
Blue Ark from the.
Oh, is that who it was?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh, okay. Okay.
Called from St. Louis. Burnham, you're not leaving, are you? No! No!
Look at him hiding the whiskey as he goes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's taking it.
What am I going to do?
You're going to sit down and talk with us.
You never told me.
You're getting ready to sit down and talk with us.
When did you turn into a girl?
You can come sit over here. Come on.
Jesus. And Burnham's trying to sneak out.
No one gets out alive.
Where the fuck do you think you're going?
I'm not fucking.
He's getting belligerent now.
Hi, I'm Jamie McAlvey. I hate Karen Gillan and I want him to die. And you're listening to Around Comics.
All right, we will get back to the craziness at Dark Tower in just a few minutes. But now it's time for our first look back segment over the last 4 years, some of the interviews that we had the pleasure to conduct. And this first one was an absolute thrill for all of us. It is with one of the true legends in comics, Mr. Gene Colan. And if you've been lucky enough to meet Gene in your travels, I'm sure that you walked away with the same opinion that we did, that he's not just a legend in comics, but just an absolutely wonderful human being. Gene is and his wife are fantastic people, and it was an absolute honor to have him on the show. And this following segment from our talk with Gene Colan is about him growing up as an artist and his time serving in World War II in the Pacific, which is pretty darn amazing if you think about it. So here is part of our conversation with Gene the Dean Colan. I imagine you as the type of person that always had a pencil and a pad of paper with you, kind of always. Wherever you went.
Always. Now, I remember doing something pretty nasty in the confines of my family. My mother, when I was very young, knew that the quickest way to punish me and the best way would be to take my pencil and paper away. And so she would do that. She would say, okay. Yeah, you're going to be a wise guy. Now you're going to pay for it, and you're not allowed to draw for a week. That was almost impossible for me to do. So when she was not looking, out would come the pad and pencil.
draw with rocks so, if you had to.
I would have, at threat of life and limb, I would have done it just like I did it then.
Now you enlisted in the Marines originally during World War II.
Yes, I tried to get into the Marine Corps, and my father came down and got wind of it. I told him, and he says he went down to the enlistment station and told him that I was underage, and I was, and so they released me.
But you did end up going.
I got into the Air Force. Yeah, I did.
I did everything
but fly.
And you were stationed in the Philippines, correct?
Yes.
And there was a time there that you worked for the Manila Press?
I was overseas in the Philippines for quite some time. And then I got the idea of maybe getting some of my work into the Manila Times. That was the big newspaper there in the Philippines, in Manila. Manila was basically made up of craters and, you know, shell craters and bullet holes everywhere. It was a mess, but I did get work from them, quite a bit of it. And I actually made more money from them than I did from Uncle Sam. So I enjoyed that. I really did.
Now, was that strip work? Was that more...
No, I had a running diary of my experiences in the service, all in the form of cartooning.
Wow.
Highly influenced by Kniff, I sort of patterned my style after him, at least as close as I thought I could ever get. And I would just keep a running diary from day to day as to what happened each day that passed, and would do it in the form of course, in the form of drawing. I managed to get into special service when I was overseas. I tried everything in the book to get into special service, but each soldier had a what they call an MOS number, and once that was given to you, you could never change it, so they told me. And I was trying to get out of it the worst way, and everybody in my unit knew that's exactly what I was trying to do. And one day they rounded up a lot of guys and wanted to know, it was the main question that they asked everyone, what they would do if a Japanese prisoner ever escaped. And when the time came to me and they said, what would you do, Regine? Would you just let him go or what? Because you've got to remember, if he escapes, you have to serve his time. And I said, it didn't matter to me about that. I wouldn't shoot him, if that's what you're asking. I'd let him go. And that did it. They got me right out of... I was a prison chaser at that time, sitting on top of a garbage truck with a carbine and making sure that the prisoners would do what they had to do during the day. And I would have done anything to get out of that. And so that's how I got out of it.
I thought you were going to say that you told him that you can make a really great drawing of that Japanese soldier running away. Exactly what happened.
Well, Gene, at that time, and I know that a lot of servicemen read comic books. Were those, I mean, were you keeping up with what the industry was doing while you were in the service? No?
No, not at all, no. I just simply took advantage of where I was, and it was just a mecca for information as subject matter. Mm-hmm. There's so much subject matter. I would draw the Japanese prisoners. I would, if we had a shutdown zero on the field, I drew that. I even got inside of I think it was a Mustang fighter, and pretending, we're looking at the instrument panel, and I said, my God, you'd have to be a walking encyclopedia in order to run this thing. And so I sketched the entire layout of the dashboard. Every number, every switch, everything. And then I noticed that sitting in this plane that I was sitting awfully low. I could hardly look out the front window. I said, how the hell do these pilots, fly this thing? And I noticed the seat that I was sitting in. It had a big hole in it. A huge hole. It was a metal seat. But I had no padding and nothing. It was just a big hole. And my butt was resting right into the hole, which didn't give me any height. And then I realized later that it was, if I had been a pilot, I would have been sitting on my parachute.
Oh, okay.
So that would have made the difference. But it was great. I just enjoyed myself overseas. There were some rough moments, but I did fine.
This is Rick Remender.
This is Tony Moore.
And you're listening to Around Comics, and you should be reading Dear Agent.
Have a seat.
Yeah, but we had a guy call from St. Louis. And,
which was very cool.
Farewell.
Was he eating Provel? Is this your first call from St. Louis?
Well, I mean, we've talked to Somni.
He called the shop, though. That was
yeah, he called the shop.
Like Dark Tower account. He had to look up. Yeah, he went online and found the number for Dark Tower and called the shop. Chris hands me the phone from the shop. I'm like...
Who's
my
this?
Wife?
Who the fuck is he?
What the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, that was kind of wild.
Yeah, so, yeah, he just wanted to.
Interesting.
Burna. Oh!
The Burnham Bell.
The Burnham Bell.
Buy it.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well.
You were trying to sneak out of here without talking to us.
I'm halfway drunk and kind of forgot this was even a thing.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
Kind of forgot why you were here, huh?
Yeah.
Why you came here in the first place.
Who are these fucking guys with the headphones? What are they trying to do? You pipe down. I'm trying to have a conversation here.
Yeah? How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Slightly overworked, but, you know, pleasantly busy, I guess.
Yeah? Well, overworked. What are you working on?
Well, I am theoretically, I'm finished with the thing I'm doing for with Joe Casey, but I'm finishing it up as I'm doing. I don't know if I told you guys I'm doing doing the Amory Wars at Boom.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, I'm 12 issues worth, so I'm booked solid for the next year with actual money. I'm gonna make like twice as much money this year as I ever have in my life.
So his girlfriend is shopping.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, provided I don't fuck it up, I'm gonna be wearing Rolexes on my dick.
I've seen that.
Damn. Well, congratulations, man. That's
boom.
Awesome.
Boom pays well.
That's what boom means, baby.
So.
Damn. Mark Wade had that shit working there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're not fucking around over there.
No, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Well, thanks a lot, man.
So what's the Casey deal? Is that announced? Are you guys just sitting on it?
We are.
What's the secret? Big secret?
We are holding off on announcing it till May because his agent told him that the way to get maximum bang for your announcement buck is to do it. You know, he said May 13th at 1:00 p.m. is the best time to do it. So we're gonna announce it and solicit it in May. It's gonna come out in July in time for the San Diego show, and we're gonna sell it for $100 million to Hollywood. Sylvester Stallone is gonna blow me. It's gonna be great.
He's gonna blow the Rolex right off your dick.
Blow the Rolex.
I love drunk Burnham. This is awesome.
You guys are offending the shit out of me right now.
Fuck. Well, that's awesome.
I'm happy drunk Burnham. I haven't said anything against the Jews yet.
I've been tweeting about drunk Burnham, too.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
He hasn't talked about Alan Moore and what's under his beard. It's been
Stevie Nicks is under his beard, by the way. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, that's cool news, man. So,
that's great. Yeah, it's great that Sylvester Stallone's going to blow you.
Right?
No, really, that's cool, man.
That's
cool.
How that works.
All right, are you set up at C2E2? You going to be an artist alley?
I am. Wait, who's an attractive Hollywood woman that I prefer?
Scarlett Johansson.
Eva Longoria.
She looks way too much like my actual girlfriend. That's no good.
Angelina Jolie.
Oh, listen to this shit. Oh, Scarlett Johansson. No, it's...
I need
it's
some strange.
It's too much like the trim I already got.
So your girlfriend
got.
Is blind? I get that, Chris. It's good.
Fuck.
That's
deaf,
good.
Too.
Megan Fox? Will that work for you?
She has got toe thumbs. Have you seen her fingers?
Toe thumbs.
Megan Fox has her fingers look like toes.
I gotta tell you, I never even realized
this
she had
is truth.
Arms.
This is truth.
Interesting.
I'm speaking.
Interesting. I have a certain segment of my family that have feet that are more like fingers.
Finger toes?
They can pick up shit with their feet and like weird. Play the piano. And
so when you go to the house, when you go to the house, do you hear this a lot?
It's just strange. They can pinch you with their toes. And I don't know. They're monkey people. I don't fucking know. They're cousins,
Christ.
Distant cousins,
from Arkansas.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, no,
throw that out there.
That's great. So, we couldn't let you sneak
out.
Without,
that's
without,
what it was. He was sneaking out.
I was sneaking out. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I forgot.
That's okay.
It's like I slept with you and I was trying to, not wake you up.
I know. And it was like he was coyote arming us. What?
He didn't even give me his number. I mean, the next morning he was like, "Here's some eggs, baby. See ya."
All right, go away. We're done with you now.
What? Now you can fucking leave.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Now you're done.
Fuck that. What else we got? What about the chick from that one show? She was pretty hot. Sophia Vergara, maybe? Is that her name from Modern Family?
The
Buxom
Dominican
one that can't speak
or...
English, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wait, yes.
The Golden
yes,
Girls
yeah,
episode?
What? No. I know who he's talking about. Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
I like that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Al Bundy's wife.
Yes.
Yeah, she's nice. She's nice.
She's hot.
I just. I'd bump nuts with Al if I got to have him.
All right. God. I think.
What?
Wow.
You know what I'm talking about.
It's called
about.
A moon landing.
Why all right. did you call this guy back over here? What? Why
I know,
did you let
I know.
Him leave?
All right. It's time for a voicemail. This one. This one's from Cammy.
Guys, it's Cammy, host of Cammy's Cup Corner, calling you from San Diego, California. I'm calling to.
Can I stay
say,
with you, for Comic-Con?
Thanks for the hundreds of hours of
comic book thing on a boat
that you've provided me with over the years.
Cammy's a little
drunk. I feel
like
I got to know you all as you know, close friends in a creepy internet way. And
that's how I got most of my friends.
You know, it's sad. It's like watching one of your favorite sitcoms coming to an end. But at least you guys are going out on top. As you slowly fall apart.
If only someone paid us $1 million for
doing their own podcasts. Chris, I love 11 o'clock comics. That was probably my favorite new pods. Well, not new, but new to me. Podcast 2009. I'll be a loyal listener. Tom, I can't wait to hear you take on the Flash, or not the Flash, Aquaman, because he's one of
can't wait my, to hear what he says about me. If he even fucking remembers that,
who
man,
are you?
He's doubtful. A character I enjoy.
Sal, but, I love Atomica.
Yeah, what's that word? He's my secret.
Hey, Green Hornet.
Fuck. Okay, fuck that. And, Sal, you keep doing what you're doing.
Hey! All right.
So,
do what you're doing.
I'm
gonna keep on keeping on.
I eat, sit back and relax.
Shut the fuck up.
And then I can just start enjoying all over again. Bye.
Wait, did he say he's gonna start from the beginning and re-listen to this shit?
Over what? And over again.
What's wrong with that?
That sounds like jail.
What?
Like jail.
It's gold, brother.
Hi, I'm Ed Brubaker. When I'm not waiting for the trade, I like to listen to a Round Comics podcast.
Oh, Burnham, how you take us to places that get us in trouble. Well, here is our second interview flashback, and we could not wrap up Around Comics without a snippet from one of my favorite creators. I know it's been kind of a running joke on the show for quite a while, my stalker tendencies towards Greg Rucka, but Greg, just like Gene Colan, is a fantastic person. It's been an honor to get to know him a little bit through the show, and this interview clip is from a couple years ago, and it's talking about my favorite book, which is Queen and Country, which some say I have an unnatural love for.
All right, guys, enough of this 52 and Checkmate and Wonder Woman crap. We're going to talk about the real book now.
Oh,
that's right. It's time for me and Greg Rucka to talk about Queen and Country.
Oh.
He's lit some what? Scented candles.
What's that? Scented. He's got incense.
He's in a bath, and he's like, let's talk about it.
We're going to leave now, Greg. We're just going to leave you with Chris.
Alone at last.
So, Greg, when God talked to you.
Oh, all right. Come on. Let's try and be civil, serious in some way. Okay. I'm going to, you know what? Okay. I have to.
Ask a non-masturbatory question. Yeah.
Jesus. Chris turned me on to Queen and Country. He was reading it long before I did, and I started reading it in trade because by that time it was way too difficult to try and find the issues. And I really got into the book, and I loved the book, and I've read the first, I think, five or six trades. And then I found out that you stopped writing the comic and wrote two novels that interrupt the story. And I was like, wow, now I mean – not that I don't read books, but it felt like, to some degree, I was being forced to have to read a novel to keep up with the story. Now
woo-hoo.
Well, no.
You know, I mean, it's fair. I understand how you could feel that. I wanted to write the novels from the start. There are things that you just can't do in a comic book. And there were stories that I wasn't going to be able to tell about Tara in a comic. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to tell those stories. The way I had approached it initially was that when I first was going to write the first QNC novel, I was actually going to take the first story arc and sort of novelize it. And then as I sat down to begin work on it, I realized that that was just a total cop-out. I had already written that story, and that if I was going to write a novel about Tara, I wanted it to be a novel that Q&C fans would see as a Valentine, basically, that would give them all this other stuff that they hadn't had access to before. And it felt to me that as soon as I made that decision, that the novel was going to have to matter in the continuity of the series. It was going to have to is going to have merit in the overall sort of Q&C canon. And to do anything else was going to cheat. So, yeah, it's fair to say that, you know, well, hey, dude, you went out there and you wrote these novels, and now if I want all my Queen and Country, I've got to read the novels. And I can, you know, I'm not going to disagree with that. I will say that I tried to set up Red Panda in such a way that if you hadn't read the novels, you'd sit there and you'd go, what the hell, Tom died?
But spoilers! What are you doing? I haven't gotten that far yet.
well, but you'd, but you would still at least,
please,
you would
still
know
buy it.
What you needed to know to enjoy Red Panda, if that makes sense. It goes okay. back to what we were saying about Checkmate. That there would be enough information up front that you would be able to get through the comic and be able to see the comic and enjoy the comic for what it was, and then if you wanted to know the rest of it, you could turn around and go back. In the same way that in Private Wars, you know, the line in the opening of the book in the, quote, pre-operational briefing on Chase is about Red Panda. Like, and then, you know, she went to Iraq on Operation Red Panda, and things got bloody. Things got very bloody, perhaps bloodier than they had needed to get. And that's all it says about Red Panda. You don't know anything else about the operation. So you pick up issue 29, and now you see Red Panda. But you also see, you know, sort of the segue between the two novels. I've had at least one fan get really angry at me about having read the start of Red Panda, was furious that there had been this novel and felt like they were cheated. But, you know, I can't apologize for it. I'm very proud of the novels. I think both of them are probably the best novels I've written. I think Gentleman's Game is a very good book, and I think Private Wars is a very good book, and I think they may well be the best books I've written so far. So, you
well,
know.
Fuck yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't like it.
No, I don't say that about my own work very often. I really don't. But I'm very proud of those novels. I think they're good books.
Hey, I'm Jerry Duggan.
And I'm Brian Fassane.
And you're listening to Jimmy and the Shoe. 9:10 a.m. No, I think you're listening to Around Comics, right?
My bad.
Around Comics.
I like girls.
You're listening to Around Comics.
I like girls.
All right, Sal.
Yes.
You had prepared some podcast flashbacks.
Jeez, I'm way too drunk for this. But
okay, we'll give it a shot.
No. I was I thought it would be funny to kind of look up some of the stuff that was going on in February of 2006 when we started the podcast. So I thought I'd look up a couple of things like the iFanboy guys. What were our buddies at iFanboy doing in February of 2006? Well, let's see. Their pick of the week was Jonah Hex number 4.
Awesome.
Oh, it was $2.99, and Josh had this to say: as soon as I opened the cover of this book, after noticing how much I liked the cover art, I noticed how much I liked the interior art.
Holy shit. Was he 6 years old at the time?
I don't know how old Josh was at the time. But
that was
2006.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, don't take this too seriously, because I don't encourage
none of us are.
I don't encourage anyone to go back and listen to any of our like first 15 episodes.
Agreed.
Yeah. Rough.
And then if we go over to there's not really anything funny about this one. It was just kind of interesting that the CGS guys, they were talking on February 6th of 2006. Their episode was, it said, Ronin Studios is an up-and-coming publishing umbrella, and Scar Tissue is one of their books. We spoke with Jim and Dave, who is Dave Wachter.
Dave Wachter, yeah.
The creative team on the book. Listen and hear what the famous Citizen Dave has to say about comics. So I just thought that was kind of funny. Dave was such a fucking whore on the podcast. Oh. He was on every podcast.
But I tell you what, he was one of those first creators that really realized what
a podcast can do for an independent comic book creator. And you know, he listened to podcast. He used it to the to his best advantage, and even to this day, I mean, Dave still listens to podcasts and is active in the podcast community. But yeah, he got onto that real quick.
And he's fucking awesome.
That dude has turned into a real fucking artist.
Yes,
man.
He has.
He is awesome.
His convention sketches kind of fucking pissed me off because they're really good. They make everyone else look like shit.
He got me a Wildcat. I asked him for a Wildcat because I saw him do a convention sketch for someone else. And I asked him, could you do one for me? He did. Fucking blew me away. He's
pound,
amazing.
Pound for pound.
Yeah.
Best comic convention sketch artist out there.
February 16th of 2006, John Suntress of Word Balloon podcast had this amazing exclusive interview. It was the Bendis tapes, part one of three.
Wow!
Brian's 3-hour Q&A session featuring questions provided by the posts on the Bendis board.
And was that his first Bendis tape?
Was that really?
I think that was his first Bendis tape.
Oh
yeah,
God.
Wow.
Oh
man, four plus years ago.
Years ago, the Bendis tapes.
Oh
yeah.
Man, and that's a twice a year event now for John.
Is that,
right?
Yeah, I think he does it twice.
John, you do Bendis tapes twice a year now? Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that was it says enjoy this informal session with Brian Michael Bendis, who had an avalanche of questions piling up on his message board. He asked if we could do a special podcast going over the list. Piece of cake, I thought, just like it's hard to read.
Are you really reading that?
I'm trying to, but John's
imitate John. Imitate him.
I don't think I can really. I think I can do
you do Suntress, I'll do Bendis.
I don't think I
do it.
Brian, I can't do John.
It's really fun, John. Thanks for having me on your show. Thanks.
Come on. All right, moving on. We had I also looked up some of the stuff that was going on
in the comics industry
in 2006. One of the things Marvel had announced the new Wolverine team of Mark Guggenheim and Ramos was taking.
Oh, that was great!
That was a good run.
That went into the whole Civil War stuff.
We had DC sent Infinite Crisis number 4 back to print.
Ooh!
Let's see what else we got here. Image previews for February 8th. Bomb Queen number 1, Invincible number 28.
Wow.
Gun Candy number 2. I don't even remember.
I've never heard of that.
Runes of Ragnon number 3.
Wasn't that an Ultraverse thing?
I have no idea. let's see. And then we had this one was pretty good. It was Jesus Saves. This April, vampires will fear both the cross and the guy who hung from it. When Jesus returns to battle the bloodthirsty undead hordes
that
threaten humanity. This is the premise for the 48-page one-shot loaded Bible, Jesus versus Vampires.
Yes, sir.
CBR News spoke with writer Tim Seeley about the book on February 1st of 2006.
Tim Seeley.
That was 4 years ago? Yeah.
Scotty Young cover? On that, or was that
Loaded Bible?
That was number
two.
Loaded Bible 2. Okay, because Mike. Now, did Mike do the art for 1 or 2?
Norton.
Yeah,
2.
He did the art for 2. Okay, which we appeared in Loaded Bible 2.
I believe that. Yeah, that
really. Were you bystanders or vampires? Or did you get killed?
In a crowd. We were in an angry mob.
Nice.
So I looked dumbfounded. Sal looked angry.
I thought you looked familiar.
I had a baseball cap on, and Sal was going to beat the fuck out of somebody.
No, I was just yelling at vampires that came. Or no, Jesus. I was yelling at Jesus.
Were you yelling at Jesus?
I think I was yelling at Jesus, yeah. Let's see, what else? Vinita Rogers sat down with a lengthy chat with Jeff Johns. Mike Turner.
Did it need to be lengthy at that point?
Mike Turner did a alternate cover for Civil War number 1.
This was before Turner died. Too soon.
Right then, another artist.
You can laugh, Chris. It's okay.
Seth Fisher.
You're not an asshole.
Had just passed away.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Seth. Was that in Japan? Where did he die at?
I think he was here. I don't remember exactly.
Fell out of a hotel window?
Something like that, yeah.
That is the saddest I've ever been about someone I never met dying.
Seth Fisher?
Yeah.
What was the Batman Snow?
Yes, Snow or Winter or something like that. Yeah, Batman's Legend of the Dark Knight. Colored by Dave Stewart. Looking really good.
Yeah, I have that. I have that at home. He had done some Fantastic Four stuff.
Yeah, he did the Fantastic Four Big in Japan. He did
Green
Lantern Will World. And he designed this game, Seth Fisher's Flowering Nose. One of the greatest games ever played. Fucking amazing.
No kidding.
It's on the internet. Flowering Nose.
This is David Peterson, creator of Mouse Guard, and you're listening to Around Comics.
All right, and for the next flashback interview segment, it's an interesting little time capsule piece. It kind of reminds me how many up-and-coming artists and writers we talked to on the show over the last 4 years. And this following gentleman had just finished a pretty awesome mini-series called The Other Side, which was about Vietnam. And here, Jason Aaron talks about a new series that was just getting ready to launch called Scalped. Before we forget, I want to talk about an upcoming series that you have planned. I believe it is in the January previews for your new series Scalped with Jacques.
Well, Jacques does the covers, but the interior art is by the European artist R.M. Guerra.
And I'm obviously unprepared to ask you about this.
Sculpt. So it's a book.
Garrett's pretty unknown. He's unknown in the States, so don't feel bad. You know, he's done a lot of work in Spain and in France, but I think this is his first big book in the States.
What is Sculpt going to be about?
Well, Sculpt is a crime drama / urban western that's set on a modern-day Indian reservation. Focuses on organized crime revolving around this newly opened casino on the res. It's sort of like The Wire meets Cormac McCarthy with some Elmore Leonard westerns and Peckinpah and like a little Bruce Lee thrown in. So.
I think Sal just got excited.
Sounds like
what?
and a lot of nudity. There's a lot of nudity.
Nice.
Curse words for the kids, because that's what the kids like.
The kids want to buy books with nudity and swearing.
That's right.
I did. What made you want to write about this sort of concept? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, a crime drama, but set in the setting that you're putting it in, it seems like an interesting perspective. But what brought you to that story?
Just another one of those long-running obsessions I've had, just like the Vietnam War. Native American history and culture has been another one of those things that's fascinated me for a long time. And, you know, just like I haven't been to Vietnam, I'm not a Native American. So I'm, you know, taking a risk and then I'm venturing into something that some people may tell me I have no business writing about. But the crime angle just seemed to fit perfectly because you haven't really seen people tackle that yet. You know, Indian gaming has become such a huge thing in the last decade. You know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry now in the United States. And you hear some vague reports about how organized crime is starting to get involved in that, which a lot of people deny. So it seemed like something that was fresh, a fresh setting and fresh idea for a crime story. It actually started out as it was going to be a Vertigo relaunch of the old DC character Scalp Hunter. Remember from Weird Western Tales.
It kind of disappoints me because I had an idea a couple years ago for a movie that would be a parody of Ocean's 11, but they'd be robbing an Indian casino. Because I remember when I was a kid, because I grew up in Green Bay and there's a huge Indian casino nearby. And when we were 18, that was like the place to go because it was the one like sort of evil thing you could do at 18. You know, it was like gamble. So
or vote. You could vote. That's
keep your political opinions sorry. Stop, Sal. Voting.
Well, anyway,
don't let me stop you from doing your idea. By all means.
No, I mean, God damn it! It's happened with Superman.
Although we are doing that exact same story in the next story arc. Now we are.
Scribbling notes.
I know one of the things that you've done with this book that you don't see in a lot of times in these types of stories is that the cast is almost completely Native American. You're not using a half white, half Native American hero or even a white hero or something, you know, that you see in a lot of stories that are centered around that culture. I know that was something that was sort of important to you, and could you speak to that, you know, and why you wanted to make sure that was the way it was?
Yeah, I just think that's like a typical Hollywood cop out, and that you have somebody who sits down and says, "Hey, cowboy Indians are cool. Let's do a movie about Indians, set among Indians, but let's make the main guy a fucking white guy. Like, hey, our samurais are cool. Let's do a movie called The Last Samurai, and let's get Tom Cruise to play the lead." Like, you know, that always seemed like a Hollywood cop out. And so yeah, I was very committed from the get go. If we're gonna do a book set on an Indian reservation, then shouldn't the cast mostly be Indians? So yeah, the main characters are almost exclusively Native Americans. You know, we did have a few white guys poking in here and there, but yeah, that was very important.
And the story is basically it's about a character who's coming back to the reservation after being gone for a while and sort of denying his heritage, and he's a police officer. Is that correct?
Well, yes. Dash Badhorse is his name, and he's been gone for 15 years, and he's a guy who's always rejected his native culture and has never been interested in, you know, considering himself a Lakota, and is kind of forced to come back to the reservation for reasons you'll see in the first issue, and winds up hooking up with the local tribal leader who's also, you know, a burgeoning crime boss, and through him winds up becoming a tribal cop. So, and there, you know, there's some secrets along the way, which I won't spoil, but that's the basic gist of it.
With both The Other Side and Scalped, it seems like, you know, the perspective we're seeing both these stories from are with characters that in a lot of history we haven't really seen sympathy for. A lot of the, you know, the Vietnamese characters and American Indians are obviously characters that have been oppressed and victims of American aggression in history. Did you ever have any experience with this so far as people thinking maybe, I don't know, you know, your work is un-American in some way, or have you had any sort of, you know, retaliation in any way because of it?
No, not that I know of.
Okay, you just gave people ideas.
Sorry, I didn't.
Someone's like, wait a second.
It's not my opinion. I was just wondering if, you know, because the reason I ask is because when I'm reading The Other Side and then I heard about Scalp, you know, I was just kind of thinking, it's like, wow, you know, we really wouldn't see these stories, say, 25 years ago or 20 years ago. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be able to tell these stories in the way you're doing it and not get a lot of feedback, negative feedback from it. So I was just wondering if you had seen any at all, and it sounds like not. So that, I think that's good, but
You know, and I didn't really come into these books like with an agenda in mind or anything. I think it just kind of worked out, and just these were the stories and the characters I was interested in using. There was no grand plan.
He's not sitting there twirling his mustache.
Hi, this is Mike Norton, co-creator and artist of Gravity. And if you're not listening to Crankcast, you should be listening to Around Comics.
Here's our only back-to-back flashback segment, but I think it's fitting because it goes along with the We Knew Them When theme, and this is a writer who was just getting ready to release a series from Image Comics called Casanova. He also had an original graphic novel called The Five Fists of Science, which we talk about here with writer Matt Fraction.
How did you find, what got you interested in those characters enough to research this and come up with this story?
This is going to sound, it was totally magic. I was looking up the etymology of the line, thunder's great, but lightning gets the job done. and it was Mark Twain. And in the finding of this, I found that in connection with an essay about Twain and Tesla's relationship. And the minute I found out that Twain and Tesla were friends, I said, they fight crime. You know, they save the world. This summer, you can't spell action without T and T. And, you know, it just, it became, the whole story fell together in my head.
Well,
Well, Tesla's certainly a character. I mean, some of the
I didn't make up any of the weird stuff about Tesla.
I mean, some of his inventions and things that he was working on and sort of the mystery that surrounds him.
Yeah.
It's perfect for that sort of telling because he could, you know, you're with a guy like that, you're not sure what is real or what isn't because the stuff that he did do is so fantastic.
Well, and we would recognize him today as having obsessive compulsive disorder and being probably having Asperger's syndrome or being a highly functional autistic.
Mm-hmm.
He did towards the end of his life, but for the most part, he didn't write stuff down. He would build things literally in his head and then be done with them. They would work in his head just fine, so he didn't have to build the physical thing. So a lot of his inventions we can't replicate or we don't know how to replicate because the plans don't exist.
So he must have made a smaller version of that robot, right?
Your only exaggeration is
the size of it.
When he died, the Pentagon seized all of his papers, and they are classified to this day.
God, that is
that blow your mind.
let's let the listeners get up off the floor.
And Tesla is the kind of guy who would mention in a letter, oh yeah, so I invented a thing that was this weapon, but the military didn't want it because it's too scary. Anyway.
It's called the teapot, and you can listen to music.
Later, he was talking about having invented a death ray that would crack the world in half.
Good Lord.
Well, who knows?
That is fertile ground for a writer right there.
Or a podcast,
yes.
Just Mark Twain and Nikola Tesla being buddies. Like, that's just, it's a story right there. That just, what are they like in the room together? How do they eat together? It's too many questions. And the whole kind of thing that's fell into my head kind of all at once. As I started to do research, the story started to become true. I'm not kidding. I made it up and then it was all true.
Hi, this is Andy Parks. You are listening to Around Comics.
Oh, hey, I was thinking about you today because Sal comes into the office and he's telling me that there's going to be 3 tattoo artists at C2E2.
Yeah.
And Vince being on 11 mm-hmm. o'clock is totally psyched out because. Psyched up because Larry Martyr is going to be at C2E2, and he wants Martyr to draw a bean
mm-hmm.
on and get a tattoo of Martyr's sketch.
Awesome.
So and I was like,
the bean,
yeah, because you are a
he wants to flick
you're
the
a bean world guy.
I'm a big bean guy.
Yeah. So have you met Larry Martyr yet?
I did. I met him at San Diego. He was really nice. I was really kind of starstruck and, you know, tongue-tied and really couldn't form a sentence. It was, me good think, fuck you.
Beans.
Yeah, bean, good.
Beans good.
What is Mr. Spook like? Yeah.
So, anyway, I was thinking about you. Every time I think of Bean World, I think of you and Vince B.
Aw.
How sweet.
Yeah. So anything else going on?
Let's see. February, you want to know the top 10 comics for February of 2006?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
As a matter of fact, I was just thinking of the day. What are the top 10 comics of February 2006?
Number 10, Uncanny X-Men, number 469.
Bought it.
Number 9, Supergirl, number 5.
Bought it.
Really?
Yeah, but that was the
oh, wait, did you say number 5?
Yes.
Did not buy it. Go.
Number 8, Green Lantern, number 9.
No.
Number 7, Green Lantern, number 8.
No.
Oh,
this is confusing. Number 6, Amazing Spider-Man 529.
Bought it.
Number 5, Ultimate Wolverine versus Hulk, number 2.
little did people know they wouldn't see.
Laughed at it at the store and did not buy it. Go.
Number 4, Supergirl, number 4.
Bought it.
Supergirl was a big fucking seller back then.
Yeah, for real.
Number 3 was Justice, number 4.
Bought it.
Number 2 was New Avengers, number 16.
Did not buy it.
And the number 1 comic of February 2006 was Astonishing X-Men number 13.
Oh, wow.
140,000.
Bought
estimated
it.
Sales.
And loved it.
Wow.
Give this guy a fucking medal.
Wait, so Whedon and Cassidy were already 5 years into Astonishing X-Men at that point?
Now, here's some information.
Burn.
The top 300 comics sold 6.05 million copies.
Mm-hmm.
That was 2000 6. In 2010, mere 4 years later, the top 300 comics sold 5.38 million copies. We're going down, folks. We're going where that's like an 18, what is that, 18%
print is dying.
It's
how many were stolen? How many were downloaded and stolen? Is that even actually a thing, or is that people pretend that that's a thing?
What?
Digital downloads?
Nah, I don't. Nah, I don't want to get into it.
Me neither. Who cares?
Are you that drunk, Chris?
No, it's just it's a topic that. Okay, you want to talk about?
I just love saying Chris and having two of you.
Chris,
you want to talk about the history of Around
Comics?
Listen,
I told you about lisping in front of me, fucker.
It's those kinds of topics that became pretty laborious with the show.
Right.
Is talking.
I'm sorry, I asked.
Industry talk that kind of stuff. So,
no, you know, I think it's a debate that's still going.
Yeah.
So let's drop it.
Yeah. Comic books will always be there. Comics will always survive. The business will always change.
Agreed.
And since about 1940, 1939, comics have always been in danger of being, you know,
of catching on fire, of being dropped in the toilet.
I mean we're going,
is your mom gonna throw that comic away?
Hey man, read the 10-cent play. Comics have been in danger in the public eye and sales and all that since like 1939, and that is a constant with comics. But
am I gonna forget it on the train?
Maybe.
But that would be a good thing.
Then someone else will pick it up and throw it away.
Exactly. That's a good thing, then.
But comics will always be around.
I will buy comics, and yes, they are $3.99 a pop now. I give them away. I give them to friends.
Do you?
Yes, I do, because I'm
tired. I bag them and I lock them away where no one will ever see them ever again.
I'm sick of that, because who's going to buy them from you, Chris?
Mark will at double the face value.
I'm going to read that shit again.
Wink.
How am I going to read it again if I give it away? I like to read it as it comes out. Then when the story's done, I read it again in a different context.
Because I am the asshole who will buy the trade later on.
Oh, you are an asshole.
When it's done. Yes, I've bought your house in Burnham. Thank you.
What are you looking at, Mr. Salazar?
I was just looking at some of the other stuff going on in 2006 on Newsarama.
Give it to me.
Next Wave number one came out.
That. Now, anybody who has not read Next Wave yet, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Go buy it now and read it.
If you haven't bought it by now, just, you know, there's buses on the street. Just hop in front of one.
Thank you. Yes. Burnham's correct. Hop in front of a bus.
All right. I've got an email from some old friends of the show.
Old friends.
This is from Adam Withers and Comfort Love. The Uniques, and they say, "Hey Chris, we hope all is well with you, and sadly not Tom anymore. Hope Sal is doing well. We're emailing you because
I'm reading the email. Sal was not mentioned at all.
Shut up!
I'm reading it right over his shoulder.
Thanks a lot.
We're emailing you because the email title says we're humbly asking you for our help, and
nobody loves me."
We just released two really big things that we're trying to get the word out on.
Kiss my ass.
First off, we recently just released the 53-page extravaganza, which was the 9th issue of The Uniques. It took some 3.5 months, but we feel it was quite an achievement. Not only was it 53 pages of action-y awesomeness, but it was also like the first season finale for the series. Below is a link for the issue, extra points if you find Adam Hughes and his lady Allison in its pages. Secondly, we also just started a spinoff series called The Uniques Tales. It's in its first run. It's going. If you want to check out the comic, you can go to www.uniquescomic.com. And I just wanted to, I wanted to read this email because Adam and Comfort are two great people.
Oh yeah.
You're so upset that they didn't mention
you in
the
email.
I love
them, by the way.
Hey, I've only been on 250 fucking episodes. Yeah.
Go to the uniquescomic.com website and check out their stuff.
They're awesome.
I'll be right there.
They are fantastic folks. They've been big supporters for the show for a long time, except for Sal. And
I'm sure they listen to all the episodes.
And the Uniques is a really fun comic. And track them down at the next comic book convention you go to, and get the trade of their first book. Good Lord, what are we doing over here?
Just fixing the mic.
He says that's what the sound is.
That's not a mic.
That's not the sound.
Shove it.
Hello, this is Steve Niles, and you are listening to Around Comics.
All right, we are getting close to the end here and have just a couple flashback interview segments left for you. And this is from one of my favorite interviews I was able to do from the magazine-style format era of Around Comics. And it was a format that some people loved and some people hated, but it's still part of the history of the show. And I want to thank all the people that had provided segments for that show. A lot of work went into it from a lot of different people, and had a lot of fun collaborating with them. Well, this interview is from Denny O'Neill, who is just an icon in comics. A lot of the stuff that we know every day about Batman came from Denny O'Neill, either as a writer or running the Bat office at DC. And this part of the interview is about him working on some Steve Ditko created characters.
I want to talk to you a little bit about some of those early projects that you worked on with DC. One in particular, you worked on The Creeper, and I wanted to know if you had any sort of working relationship with Steve Ditko whenever you worked on The Creeper.
Yeah, and it's one of the... I have some regrets attached to Steve Ditko, and maybe The Creeper is the mildest of them. Steve, I think, is one of the seldom acknowledged greats. I would love to work with him again, but I think in political and social matters, I don't think we could be further apart. And I don't say Steve is too much of a gentleman to ever complain, but I don't think he liked what I did with his characters. I handled the Creeper semi-satirically, and I think Steve probably wanted it to be very straight on, dead serious. Wasn't too big a sin against Steve there, but later with The Question, I totally changed an awful lot about it. And much, much later, a colleague said, well, you know, if you're going to change it that much, why didn't you just create your own character from scratch? And that's a good question.
Well, do you think that Ditko created his Mr. A character? It seemed to have a lot of similarities with The Question. Do you think that was kind of his answer to The Question?
It may very well have been. I haven't seen Steve in, 15 years. And I haven't had a real conversation with him, I guess, in maybe a quarter of a century. So I don't know. And as I said, he's not the kind of guy who would complain or whine or jump up and down and say, you've sinned against me. He is a gentleman. But, you know, you ask about being a writer earlier. I had been working for DC for about 6 months, and Paul Levitt said, it's time to write again, don't you think? I think I had been hired as a hyphen, as a writer-editor. And what was available was Captain Atom, who was fairly close to Superman and the kind of character I'm not comfortable with. And The Question, well, that was the kind of character I was comfortable with. So I simply said, yeah, I can do that, but I can't do Steve's version. And I think, well, the editor, Mike Gold, and I agreed on the changes I'd make. In retrospect, I don't know if I had a right to do that to Steve's vision. It just didn't occur to me at the time that it was ever going, that it might bother him. Sure. And now I think, well, I don't know if it bothered him, but I think it's a possibility.
You know who we haven't talked with that we have to talk to?
Is it because I'm straight?
We got to talk to
Are you
Dave.
Discriminating?
We should.
Are you kidding me?
What?
You want Mark over here?
Yeah, we gotta talk to Bing.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
We should.
Do you want me to tell you about him?
All right, I'll go get him. I will step out. What do you think about that?
Thank you so much.
A pleasure.
We'll see you in a few weeks.
Seriously, I have got to thank you guys. You have you've made me a fair amount of money. That sounds really crass. No, but like many people that
we've
come
supported
up
supported you. That's a better way of saying.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Many people that come up to me at conventions know me because of me being an asshole on the show, and so. You know, they
as
would
as opposed to your real life.
They wouldn't know who I was, you know, otherwise. So, seriously, thank you for providing me with a platform for my art, which is being an asshole.
It's our pleasure, sir.
Awesome. Remember, folks, Rolex on the cock.
Burnham, do me a favor. Guy. When you go over com. And get Mark, mm-hmm. walk slowly.
All right, go get us, Mr. Beatty.
Good God, I gotta get out of here.
Is it getting late?
12:35.
Yeah, we're done.
We're getting real close.
I'm not done yet. Give me more drinks.
Steve's just getting going. Here comes Beatty with his dog.
Fucking drunks.
Hi, Coco. Mr. Beatty.
Mr. Niesman.
How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, man.
All right. Well, we couldn't wrap up without talking to you.
Well, we okay. could. But, we could have, I mean, but we could.
Decided we could. Not to.
That would be kind of a dick move.
Sal was big on it. I know. Fuck that guy.
Mark who?
Fuck what? Him.
Man, never. It's 4 years. Thank you so much for no hosting problem, us. Man. It's
I appreciate you guys being here.
It's been a good run.
I have no idea what I'm gonna do with my Friday nights now. I'm like,
be able to go home early and
I have to start closing up earlier.
Hey,
now.
Mark, I can bring a disco ball and some people.
Wow.
I don't know. That's what do you think?
It's quite an offer.
That is quite an offer. Let me sleep on it.
Do that and call me tomorrow.
Okay.
But, you know, I tell you what, it's when I, and here's my little comic book story. I moved to Chicago about 9 years ago, and it had been probably a couple years back into reading comics after taking some time off in the 90s. And I moved to Chicago, and I found a store here on Western Avenue that was – what the hell was Augie's store name?
Windy City Comics.
Was it Windy – okay, it was Windy City Comics. And I started shopping there a little bit, and then it was Watchtower Comics, which opened up a couple doors down from here.
Mm-hmm.
Windy City was originally next door, two doors down.
A couple doors that way, actually. Okay. A couple doors north.
Couple doors down, and then Watchtower Comics opened up. Eventually, you would become the manager at Watchtower Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And
because it was going under.
Because it was going under, and you came in and saved the store. And I got to know you there. And then you guys moved down Lincoln Avenue.
Yeah, we moved around a lot. Our bar, it wasn't always by choice, but yeah, my boss just... Apparently, I was hired by a gypsy. I'm not quite sure.
Apparently. Yeah, I've gone to basically...
We moved three times.
The same store in four different locations since I've moved here.
Yeah.
All within a block and a half of each other.
It wasn't always by choice. Like I said, the first one we had water damage and all kinds of other issues, and they wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So we got out of the lease by basically threatening to sue.
Yeah.
So we got out of it. We moved to Lincoln Avenue. There was a storefront we were going to take over. And then the management company there decided they wanted the storefront more than we did. So we moved back up here and did actually business jumped up about 20%. So we stayed here.
Yeah, but I mean, you've been my shop owner in Chicago pretty much since I moved here.
Yeah.
Since I really
about eight years now.
Yeah, I mean it's been a good long time, and you've made a hell of a shop here, and you've been a great host for us for the show, and it's pretty. Thank you so much for doing what you've done.
Are
to
you
help
gonna
us.
Cry, you big fag?
Says the drunk fag.
Just a few more.
He's a queen.
Just a few more. You downed an entire bottle of what the fuck is that?
Exactly.
Maker's Mark.
Maker's Mark. It's right over there.
He just kept drinking it out of very classy, by the way, out of a plastic cup. Nothing says class like plastic.
Notice, I brought my own plastic
like
cup.
Like cheap-ass
sure.
plastic. Like the worst, like fucking...
He brings the bottle over to me, and I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'll have some of that." He's like, "You're not going to drink right out of the bottle, are you?" I was like, "Sure." He's like, "Let me get you a cup."
Niesman wanted to drink it out of the bottle.
It's alcohol. It cleans itself automatically. Dear Lord, man.
No, but yeah, it's been a fun 4 years. So thank you for hosting us here, man.
No problem.
I've
enjoyed it through the ups and the downs.
Boy, I mean, even
man, when I say downs, I'm talking about Sal.
Nice, thank you.
I mean, there
was taking a beat in the night.
Sal has Down syndrome.
Does explain a lot, doesn't it?
There was a time on the show where we were recording every Friday, two shows every Friday. It would start at 7:30, and we would go till midnight, 1 o'clock every single Friday.
Yep.
And you were here through all of them. Does Coco want to say something?
I apparently. yeah, it was. I remember when I actually used to listen to the show after you guys recorded. I'm thinking, why the fuck did I do that? I would be on the show sometimes, and then I'd listen to it the next day. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? I don't really give a fuck.
It was exciting.
I already know what
I
said.
It was exciting.
It was fun. Well, the first one was on that damn Skype, and as soon as you added one extra person, everything went choppy.
Went to hell. Yeah, you were the first guest on the very first.
I remember that. Talking with Mark on Skype, and then I actually met Mark the first time. I'm like, wow, that's really not what I expected from the voice. I heard his voice. I'm like,
out here who haven't seen pictures, think about Thor after a 3-year drinking binge and maybe a few years on the road. Very hard years.
You're looking a little bit more Odin than Thor.
Yeah, I guess. I'm definitely going Odin. That's all right, though. You know, it could go worse. It could be going Volstagg. That wouldn't be good. That would not be good.
Whereas your voice, it beckons an image of Hervé Villechaize.
Wow.
As he's
exactly what
to
I
plane.
Thought. That's exactly.
How big of a bottle was that?
It was pretty big.
A fair size bottle.
And I'm still drinking.
I just want to wait till I want to see him get up. This is going to be fun.
Well, wait till you see me next Wednesday.
Still hungover 4 days later.
I
had a good time, I think. It was fun. It's funny we usually record on there and then just having a lot of cool guests and weird shit and John Byrne and Rick Remender telling the shit that he said. And boy, some of the shit that went on this show from guys that are now fucking like toeing the fucking company line.
Oh. Yeah,
they look back and be like, literally, it was like they might as well have done a porn film.
we are like the porn film of comic books.
We talked to a lot of guys in the early days that ended up being pretty big names.
We were talking to Fraction whenever he was pushing Five Fists of Science.
Yeah. Well, I think Jason, Jason Aaron, Rick Remender, and Fraction were all just
even
doing Casanova.
All these
crappy little books, and now they're all like the big names.
I mean, they were good books, but they were
I'm just saying, in indie books. Just, I mean, little.
I remember talking to John Romita Jr. at Wizard World in one of our
sitting on the floor in a hallway,
and he more or less kind of announced Kick-Ass on the show,
absolutely.
You know, which hits theaters April 16th. So
we broke a lot of stories. We made a lot of stars out of this industry, basically trendsetters, movers and shakers.
And now you're old and done.
Now it's over.
The industry
will crash in our wake.
All I have to say is good.
Thanks, Stevie.
Thanks,
appreciate it, buddy.
Because next week, Comic with Queers is recording here, so it's weird. I mean, it's
CBQ.
That's the nice thing about it.
The new home of CBQ.
Welcome to the new home of CBQ.
The only thing he requested was a huge bottle of Maker's Mark and a disco ball.
But
so.
Steve, I'm taking all the recording equipment home with me tonight. I didn't hit
any fuck you.
All right. Are we done?
Are you kidding me?
If somebody's got
microphones and a soundboard at Dark Tower, Niesman will be here.
Yes.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's how it's going to be.
Put a microphone.
Hi, my name is Tony Danza, and you're listening to Around Comics. Hi, my name is John Romita Jr., and you are listening to Around Comics.
Okay, before Sal and I give our final farewells in a couple minutes, it's time for our last little walk down memory lane. And this is an interview that I think a lot of listeners became aware of around comics. I actually came to listen to the show because of this interview. We were lucky enough to talk to John Byrne a few years ago. And if you're like Sal and I, especially, we grew up reading comics in the early and mid 80s, and there was no bigger star in comics than John Byrne. And for us to talk with him was exciting and a little bit scary. But I have to tell you that after talking with him, I can say that he was the most gracious, open, and one of the funniest guests that we had on the show in 4 years. So here is part of our conversation with the fantastic Mr. John Byrne.
I'm still having fun just making the pictures, so that's okay by me. But it's kind of a shame that this, I've become the great Satan for some reason. And, I've only killed a few babies, so I really don't know why.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
you didn't want to. You had to.
Yeah, I had to. Don't you understand? I had to.
Well, I mean, I guess that brings us to some of the controversy surrounding your name. You have a very polarizing name. And you're a very polarizing. I mean, people either love you or they think you're Satan. And
everyone has an opinion.
Opinion about John Byrne. Absolutely.
Yep.
And a lot of that has come from comments that you've made on the internet or at conventions or whatever. And I don't want to get into the
specifics
or judging that in any way. I guess for me, as a huge fan of yours, I just sit back and wonder sometimes why, or why now, or why not to judge anything that you say. A lot of times I agree with what you say, but
you would know that you're stirring up the hornet's nest.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of look at and go, you know, is it just he likes to mess with people? Is it, I mean, reading through some of your forum posts, you know, some of your forums, I mean, it's like you're just fucking with people sometimes, it seems like.
It's not so much that. It's just that, really, I've never been one to sort of keep my opinion to myself. That's my curse. And put me on the internet, and oh, dear God, suddenly I have this means of sending out my opinion to everybody and everybody. And most of the time, people agree with me. They don't always agree with me, and when they don't agree with me, they tend to disagree quite loudly. And, of course, there's that other chunk of time where they're disagreeing quite loudly with something I didn't actually say, which is one of the weirdest things I found about the Internet, this, the so-called information highway. And it seems like an awful lot of people have flat tires on the information highway because they don't seem to be able to find, you know, Byrne, you said this. And I said, well, no, actually, I said nothing like that. And if you went and looked, you'd actually see what I actually said. Well, but that wouldn't be any fun, of course. There's no controversy in the truth.
I have a question, and this is Tom speaking. Are you disappointed that you never got named a Marvel Young Gun?
Well, you know, speaking as an old timer,
you missed
I don't
out.
I don't think I ever had a chance.
I actually do have a real question. You've worked a lot on characters that you didn't necessarily create, and you've done really fantastic work on stuff like Fantastic Four and Superman. When you take on a project like that and you write what a lot of people consider the definitive version of it, is it a case where it strikes you like a lightning bolt what you need to do with those characters, or is it something where you get it handed to you and then you got to think, how am I going to do something with these characters?
It's kind of a mixture of both, really. It depends entirely on the character. I mean, when you take somebody like Superman, I had been grumbling off on the sidelines about how DC didn't know what to do with Superman for about 10 years. And then I went off contract at Marvel, and almost before the contract was finished, Dick Giordano called me up and said, okay, wise guy, put your money where your mouth is. And that was kind of a thunderbolt. So I I made up a list of what I called my 20 unreasonable demands, and they accepted 19 of them. So, you know, I was like, oh, okay, they're serious about this. Uh-huh. And then with something like the Fantastic Four, well, of course, I'd been a fan forever. And on the X-Men, I was starting to get that itch that I thought, you know, I can put the words in the pictures just as easily as I can put the pictures in the pictures. And so Shooter one day said, well, do you want to write the Fantastic Four? Which is, you know, a little bit like saying, you know, do you want to walk hand in hand with God when you think about wow. the heritage, even though the book had fallen on hard times on and off, but it was still that book that had started the Marvel Universe. And I said, oh, okay. And of course, originally I was supposed to be writing it with Bill Sienkiewicz drawing it, and then Bill decided he wanted to concentrate on Moon Knight, which I think was a very smart move on his part. And we didn't have an artist, so I kind of went, oh, gee, well, you know, I can draw.
And, I know how to do that.
Ended up leaving the X-Men, for which I know many fans have never forgiven me.
Well, yeah, that ways led on to ways, and I think the people that look at that run on Fantastic Four will forgive you for that.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. I'm sure we'll get a few who disagree.
Well, you know, the first question off of that you know, I have to ask is, what was the 20th thing on the list about Superman?
The 20th thing on the list about Superman was that I was presented with when I took on Superman, the first thing I did was sort of look at all the things that were canon, you know, that we accept this automatically, and kind of said, okay, why do we accept this automatically? And it was stuff like, when was Superman ever stupid enough to say, hey, you know, I have a secret identity, you know, so why would people think he did, and things like that. And one of the things was, well, how do we know Kryptonite can kill him? You know, he's the only one. That's kind of a test of destruction. You know, if we find out that Kryptonite can actually kill Superman, then Superman is dead. So I came up with the idea that rather than baby Kal-El being sent to Earth, pregnant Lara would be sent to Earth. And she'd arrive, and she'd have the baby, and then she would be the one who was encountered with who would encounter the first piece of Kryptonite, and she would die. And that's how we would know, without killing Superman, that DC, or that Kryptonite could kill Superman. And DC said, that's a little too far. That's a little too far from the canon. Let's not do that. And it was Jeanette, actually, who suggested that we do the whole thing about how the Kryptonite radiation is already leaking from the core and killing people on Krypton. And I said, hey, that works.
Oh, wow. But, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me bring Lara to Earth.
Top
of the stack.
All
right, man.
That's it.
Finally.
That's it.
It's only taken 3 weeks.
It was more like 6 weeks.
Well, yeah, it was like 8 episodes, 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And,
3 hours of this.
Oh, Jesus, really?
Oh, single tear. Yeah.
Weeping like a baby, you can't see it.
Yeah, man, it's been a blast.
4 years, 200 and
it all started.
70
you know,
plus
we,
episodes.
We should really thank Jacques and Andy Diggle because it all started with a losers poster
it
that
is.
You hung up
at work.
And that's how we became friends. And,
yeah.
And
you read comics?
That was it. That was the beginning.
And how apropos that the Losers hits theaters.
Theater soon. Yeah. We'll have to go and see that. But,
Jesus.
It's
that
one.
We're
not getting where you know. Is that the death?
Crazy, fucking crazy Frenchman.
Crazy drunk Frenchman. Do they not have whiskey in France?
It's like Lord of the Dance over here now. No,
God.
It's you know, it's been 4 years of fun and silly and serious and just talking about comics, which is a hobby
corrupt
that
corrupt commercials.
Oh, you be quiet. It's been one of the funnest, coolest, best things I've done in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
Which is why you guys will bring it back.
He's not going to let us stop.
He's not going to let us end.
No, absolutely, man. I mean, you know, we've talked about this over and over again about how
you know, the show brought us to places and it had us meeting people and doing things that we never thought it would. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're just two guys that read comic books, and the things that we've seen and the people we've talked to and the stuff we've done because of the show has been amazing and a testament to this great industry and the great, you know, camaraderie, but you know, around comics,
no pun intended. I don't think of it as a great industry. It's a crap industry. It's a crap industry. It's a great community.
It's a great community.
That's what I've learned through doing this in 4 years.
Very loyal community, and
it's the people that make it up. It's the creators. It's the fans, and it's a community. It's not an industry. It's a community, and that is what I've learned through this show. And you know, comics are an art form. When you have an art form, you have people that love the art, and people love comics. And we tapped into that. And
it's funny. I mean, even tonight, it's like, you know, guys sitting here, you know, Michael.
Muscamp?
Yeah, he's like, you know, hey, man, seriously, I got to tell you, I wouldn't have gotten back into comics if it wasn't for you guys. And it's like, you know, for us.
Really?
I mean, we just started doing this because we wanted to
talk about comics.
We wanted to talk about comics, and we wanted people to listen to us. You know, I mean, that was pretty simple. Yeah. You know, it wasn't any great plan of what, you know, it was just, hey, we could do that, and why not? You know, we like talking about comics, so... But I mean, it was all about, and we've talked about this over and over again on the show about how I didn't grow up with any friends that talked comics, bought comics. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I had missed that through most of my life, and so that was really what the show was all about. You know, it's like now we have, when we started, it was three people that talked about comics, and that grew into 30 people in our extended, you know, group of people or more. I don't even know. You know, it's like all the people that showed up tonight and all the people that we know, whatever city we go to, you know.
And it always continues to amaze us. And,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's one of the things that, I'm a Midwestern boy, and I'd never really traveled around, you know, that much. But since we've done the show, I've gone to New York twice. I've gone to Seattle, San Francisco. I've been able to see a big chunk of this country that I probably wouldn't have taken the opportunity to see.
Yeah.
And it's because comic books. And that is the silliest but most awesome thing. You know, it's like this childhood love that I've carried over into my adulthood that I still love. And with everything that we try and escape from in our day-to-day lives, I mean, these little silly 22-page booklets give us this little moment of joy in our day. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there is something magical about that. And the show, you look back on stuff and I'm not going to get weepy or silly about it, but I mean, there's stuff that you look back on your life and say, that was special. And around comics will always be something very special to me.
Well, you know, through emails and voicemails and people, you know, talking to us and that, you know, a lot of people have told us about what the show meant to them, but you know, the show has done more for us than we've ever done for anybody else. So, you know, it's been a great ride. And, you know, this is comics. Nobody ever dies forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like it's not like you're never going to hear from us again.
It's not the last time that we've been on a podcast together.
Yeah, it just is the last you've heard of
Around comics
as it is, as you've gotten to know it, is all it is. And I'm sure we'll be back around at some point and do something. And
I was talking to David Price on the way up tonight, and he's like, you okay, man? I was like, yeah, I'm fine. It's really? It's like, yeah, you know, I came to terms with it. It was... you know, Scotty left, and then when Tom moved away, it's like, okay, you know, there's a point where what it is gone, and you can't be that anymore. And I said, you know, it's weird for me. I actually kind of worry about Sal a little bit more because I still have 11 o'clock. And David's like, oh, that's kind of cool. I was like, you know, but David, you understand that 11 o'clock was always just kind of a AC was my job, and 11 o'clock is what I did on my off hours.
And right.
I poured myself into this show, and Around Comics will always be my first love. And
but I think that was almost, I mean, that's almost why it's come to this too, is like we put so much into it.
Yeah.
It's almost like, well, kill it off and then we can, you know, it's like then we can walk away or do whatever we want at that point. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, because we did. I mean, we, you know, it's funny. You know, for 4 years, we wanted to be the number one podcast out there. And it's not until we're done that.
Yeah.
But I think we always have been.
Mm-hmm. We did the best podcast that we could. And I think for, it's hard to put it in the proper words, but for my money, Around Comics was and will always be the best podcast. I don't think there was an equal, and that was because of you. It was because of Tom.
Absolutely.
And it was a special thing, and I'm very proud of what we did, and it's pretty awesome. So kudos to you. Good.
Cheers, man.
My friend, and like we said earlier, the show may end, but the friendships never will. Everyone, and that's everyone here at Dark Tower. It's everyone out there listening. I want to thank...
Even you Canadians.
Even the Canadians. I want to thank everyone for the support over the last 4+ years. Listening to the show, being a part of the community. Everything that you've done has meant a tremendous amount to us. And I don't know where we'll be next Monday, but I do know that wherever it is, it's going to be in.
I'll be sleeping. And around
comics.
Good night.
Good night.
Find you can somehow make it like all the rest. You won't need to scrounge around for someone else. Torn between the unknown and the place that you call home, and the life you want but have never known. There was a time you could put it out of your mind, leave it all behind. There was a time, that time is gone. Tell me, 50 years in this town's done for you, except to earn your name place on a bar stool. Spend your whole life in this county, you never been out of state. You say you're gonna make it out before it's too late. There was a time you could put it out of your mind, leave it all behind. There was a time, that time is gone. Time when nothing seemed to make much sense. Now this turn more intense, and all the crutches you kept around now are nowhere to be found. Remember when you didn't have to look ahead or behind you? There was always something right there to do. But now it's life in some kind of trap, looking for a way out. We keep moving on, that's what it's all about. There was a time you could put it out of your mind, leave it all behind. There was a time, that time is gone.